T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
It's time for MLB Pitch, Hit, and Run, the official youth skills competition of Major League Baseball. Host a local event and give kids in your community a chance to compete in the Pitch, Hit, and Run finals at the 2024 MLB World Series. Sign up for free at pitchhitrun.com.
Dusty and Friends.
What would you rather be, a lion or a panda?
Coach, I'm me. Why would I want to be anything else?
This is Dusty and Friends with Dusty the Fan Man Hera.
I'm not sure you realize how psychologically healthy that actually is.
Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Jeff Russ rolling solo with you here on this beautiful Friday afternoon. Got a best of edition of Dusty and Friends for you. If you're off work already, go pop a cold one, sit on the back deck and listen to Dwight James wax nostalgic about his early days covering the Portland Trailblazers.
You got on the Trailblazers beat in 1984. That was
just in time.
My goodness. We talk about the draft hiccups that this franchise has had. That would be the year the Blazers drafted Sam Bowie over Michael Jordan.
Yeah, now, you know, the first thing we have to do is kind of take you back to what the world was like in 84. You know, this is the time where if you didn't have a big center, you weren't going to win an NBA title.
Yeah.
That was the conventional wisdom. You had to have the guy in the middle, and it had to be a really good guy or you weren't going to win. And that's the conventional wisdom. Now, given that, the player they wanted in the draft was Hakeem Olajuwon.
Yeah.
And in those days, they had a coin flip between the Eastern and Western conferences to see who got the first pick. They lost the coin flip. That was the first thing that went wrong for him. So Houston got Hakeem. And then there's Jordan, and then there's Sam. And Sam Bowie, people don't realize, you know, before the injury started, he was a heck of a player.
Yeah.
Go back and look at his rookie year. He was terrific. He could really run, and he could shoot. He was like one of the first centers who could make a three. And a good player, an honest player who worked hard, and a good guy. But
he wasn't Michael Jordan.
Obviously. Yeah, and it didn't take long to figure that out.
Yeah.
You know, Michael ended up winning a lot of games. And the other thing is Portland had Clyde.
Yeah.
They had Clyde Drexler. So it's like, okay, Jordan's going to be a star. Well, we got a star. You just didn't know that Jordan was going to be a super-duper star and maybe the best player of all time. That's what you didn't know. And
yeah.
That was hard to project. It was hard to say that a guard was going to be that kind of player because it just really hadn't happened before.
No, it never, because the conventional wisdom, as you said, you got to have a big, you have to have a center. Well, Michael Jordan kind of changed that, you know, changed the way the game is played on a lot of levels. The other thing about that year, though, that's crazy is we often forget, like Sam Bowie is one guy. The other guy they drafted that year was Jerome Kersey.
Yeah.
And Jerome, you know, he became such a valuable piece to what the Blazers built. And that team in 84 was pretty damn good when you have Clyde, Sam Bowie, was it Jim Paxson, Michael Thompson was on that team, mm-hmm. Kiki Vandeweghe, Darnell Valentine, wasn't he on that team as well?
Yeah.
And then you add, you know, young Jerome to that mix as well. The Blazers were kind of... they were really well built in that year.
They were. And you know, a forgotten man in Blazer history was that general manager, Stu Inman. And if you asked everybody who was a Blazer fan now, who was Stu Inman, they wouldn't know. They couldn't pick his picture out of the lineup. But he was terrific. And he put those teams together. And he did a great job. He had a great feel for the job. He missed some. Of course he did. They all do. Every GM misses some. But Yeah.
How long was he there for? How long was he making picks for? Because there was a run where you went, you know, whether it was 83, you get Clyde, then 84, you get Bowie and Jerome. But Jerome is like the steal of that one. 85 was Terry Porter. And then 86, you go and you get Kevin Duckworth as well. Like, I mean, you're hitting.
They traded Walter Berry.
Boom, boom, boom.
For Kevin Duckworth.
I mean, those were.
That was an amazing deal.
That's 3 years in a row where you're making, or 4 years in a row, you're making incredible acquisitions.
Yeah, that's a home run every year, really. Good starting players who made All-Star teams, you know, other than Jerome never made an All-Star team. Terry did and Duck did twice. And it's he had an incredible run. One of the best GMs this team ever had.
Well, and I think back, and you mentioned Terry making the All-Star game. And I went back and I was looking up some of those teams a while ago, and that 89 team that made the finals, Terry Porter was the highest paid player on that team, making $2.1 million that year.
Yeah,
I mean, $2.1 million, and that was the highest paid player on the Blazers.
It was a different era. We're talking about an era here where Michael Thompson would beg me to come over and watch WrestleMania at my house because I was going to pay for it, and he didn't want to pay for it.
You're kidding me.
And he said, be sure to have, it was some sort of Bahamian beer he wanted. I'd have a couple bottles of that in the refrigerator. But he would come over and watch WrestleMania, and there'd be a steady stream of my son's friends in and out of the door to get his autograph. But as long as we got to see WrestleMania, he was cool with it.
Now,
that kind of shows us how different it was covering the team back then, too. Like, you have a player wanting just to come to your house to watch WrestleMania.
Well, here's the thing, though, Mike. In those days, no charters. They didn't fly charter. They went out to the airport just like I did, stood in line. They didn't have big security in those days. But they had to sit there and wait for their flight just like a normal person. Yeah. And it kept them humble, believe me. And I can tell you so many times where just sitting around or being on the plane with them was an opportunity. I can remember Caldwell Jones coming up to me in the locker room. Great guy, the late Caldwell Jones. Fantastic man. He came up to me and he said, hey, guess what? We're going out of Houston Hobby in that Houston trip 2 weeks from now. I said, yeah, so what? Houston Hobby, he says. Houston Hobby, the best chili dogs in the league. I said, Houston Hobby Airport? The chili dogs are unbelievable. So I checked the itinerary. We're leaving Houston Hobby Airport at 7:30 in the morning.
He's getting a chili dog.
We're waiting for the plane. Caldwell says, come on, let's go. I said, come on, it's 7:30 in the morning.
He goes,
no, we're having chili dogs. We go down there, and they're open, and they're selling chili dogs. And it was a pretty good chili dog, I got to tell you. But you did. I mean, people talk about the step-back jump shots and Harden and all that. Kiki was shooting those umpteen years ago. Kiki taught my son that shot because my son was small and couldn't get a shot away real easy. But my son, they practiced at the Jewish Community Center, and Jack Ramsey would pull the bleachers down so that members could watch practice.
Oh, you're kidding.
Nowadays, you got to have a freaking signed agreement from the commissioner of the league to get
NDA
into a practice.
To go in there.
You can't get into a practice.
Yeah.
Everybody, the guys that played noon basketball at JCC, they were there watching practice every day. And Jack told me once, oh, yeah, I like spectators at practice because you know what? The guys don't want to be embarrassed in front of, even if it's 20 fans, they don't want to be embarrassed. They play hard every practice.
Well, it's incredible to think about like how accessible the NBA used to be.
Yeah.
Because when my dad coached football up at Lewis and Clark College, that's where they practiced there
LC,
too. And so it was, you know, when the football team at Lewis and Clark was getting done with their practice, you'd have the Blazers getting done with theirs, and they're sharing a shower with a bunch of NAIA football players, you know, and these are like the early 90s Blazers. These guys are going to play for championships, and they're sharing the same facilities as an NAIA football team.
But can you imagine those same guys sitting in an airport amongst real people? And believe it or not, nobody bothered him much. It wasn't. Nowadays, there'd be a selfie, you know, everybody wanting something from him. In those days, it was just like, you know, some little old lady might go up to Kiki and say, golly, you guys are all kind of tall. Yeah, we are. We're tall. Yeah. But it was so different.
I mean, that, I do have a little story just from, this was like 6 years ago when Melo was still on the Knicks. And I was at PDX and I was flying home to see my parents. So I was flying to Newark. And at the gate at PDX was Carmelo Anthony. And I'm a Syracuse grad and I love Melo. So I just like did a triple take. You don't see athletes sitting at a gate for a regular flight, like a red eye flight. And I talked to him for 2 seconds. I just wanted to say hi. I was a Syracuse grad and he was here for Nike. So he wasn't flying for the team and he was going back to New York. It is so rare to see athletes in that situation.
You know, we when I was at the Tribune, we sponsored the Oregon Sports Awards. We brought them back. It was the old Hayward Banquet. And for the first one, we thought we better get a draw, a spectator draw, somebody that maybe people would want to come see. So we thought of Charles Barkley. And Carrie and I both knew Barkley or know Barkley pretty well. Carrie calls Barkley up and said, would you come up? We don't have a lot of money to spend or anything. But would you help us get this award ceremony off the ground? We're going to honor a lot of high school kids. And Barkley said, sure, I'll come up. The only thing is, though, I can't be in an airport. People kill me in the airport. He said, I can't do that. So we went to Platt Electric, Harvey Platt, who's a great sports fan, great supporter of sports. Harvey, we got to get Barkley up here. He said, you tell Charles he can have the company plane. As long as I can send two employees who are big Barkley fans on that plane with him. Charles said, hell yeah, get them on, as many as you want, as long as it's just not too many, and it's a private plane. I don't have to be in the airport. So we did. We sent Platt Electric's plane down to Phoenix to pick up Chuck, and he flew back with these fans who just had a great time with him. He regaled them with stories. Charles Barkley goes to the Oregon Sports Awards, talks, and stands there after the awards and signs every autograph every kid who was there.
Now,
it was amazing.
That is so cool on several levels, right? We were talking about that accessibility that you had to athletes and getting to know them personally, which seems to be gone. There's like a bigger divide than ever between athletes and in the media now. But then you have Charles saying, yeah, you put some fans on. But how about Harvey Platt doing a solid for two of his employees being like,
I got two
Charles Barkley fans. I want to put them on a plane going down and back just so they can hang out with their hero.
That's the kind of guy Harvey is. He steps up.
And
that was terrific. And he knew we needed Barkley up here. And Charles, I used to do this show called Posting Up on the NBC Sports Network. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to get him, and I could never get him to answer the phone. So he was up here playing in, it was Brian Grant's charity golf tournament. And so I just went out to the course and said, Charles, I can get a camera here in an hour. Would you do an interview and sit down with me? Sure, have him come out. So I get on the phone, get the camera guy out. We set up something somewhere out on the fairway in the shade. And we did an hour with him.
You're kidding.
And they're calling for him to come in. He has to speak or doing something. I'll be fine. I'll get there in a minute, you know. And we just talked and talked. He tells in the interview how he took money from his agent when he was in college. All this stuff, you know. And throwing throwing the little man through a window in Milwaukee and saying, well, he had it coming. That's okay. So, but it was a great interview and a great guy. And I'll always love Barkley for that. He was always great to me. He was great to carry a couple guys like that. He was that way. And I'll tell you, Carl Malone was always very nice.
Really?
Talking to him. Yeah. Very polite, very nice. But there was a certain relationship between Utah and Portland where they played so much in those days in the playoffs and everything. I got to know Jerry Sloan very well and his assistant, Phil Johnson, very well. And we would meet them the night before a game. They'd come into Portland and stay at the Marriott, and we'd go down to Champions and have nachos and beers with them the night before a game. Relationship with Jerry Sloan. None of that could happen in these days.
No.
If somebody tells you they know what's going on in the locker room and all that, we can't get anywhere near these guys anymore. And since COVID, you can't even get in the locker room anymore.
And they like it that way. Well, like the organizations, the leagues like it a lot more.
The organization is adamant with their PR guys. They used to be facilitators. Now they're speed bumps. Mm. You know, they keep you from getting to athletes. And it's a shame.
Yeah. We've experienced that here, too. I mean,
I'm sure you have. Absolutely. I'm sure you have. It used to be so easy. And sometimes that thing turns around, too. When attendance starts to drop and they start realizing maybe the public doesn't have the affection for these players that they used to have, maybe that'll change.
Jeff Russ back with you here. Coming up after the break, we'll have one more segment with Dwight Janes as he talks about his relationship with arguably Portland's most beloved trailblazer, Jerome Kersey, and changes to the NBA game from when he started covering the game. This is a best of edition of Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice cold reward. Medella is the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Modelo is your reward. Modelo, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Now, with the MLB app, you can get baseball your way. Pick your favorite team, your favorite players, and get customized highlights, stories, and breaking news right on your home feed. Follow the action with Game Tip, where 3D replays add another dimension. Plus, notifications can keep you connected to every pitch, every hit, every game. The MLB app. Baseball, your way. Download it now for free from the App Store or Google Play. Blackout and other restrictions apply. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Jeff Rust with you here, flying solo on a Friday, this best of edition of Dusty and Friends. And next, we've got some more Dwight Janes with you, talking one of his good old friends and departed too soon, beloved trailblazer Jerome Kersey, and also changes to the NBA game since Dwight began covering the league.
Some of the great stories about, you know, the Portland Trailblazers are from, you know, the 70s, 80s, and then those early 90s teams. And, you know, there were special people on those teams. And one of them is Jerome Kersey, who I don't know if there are athletes now that are like Jerome. You know, it wasn't just that Jerome was from a small school and he came from Longwood and, you know, nobody had ever heard of him. And he was, Portland was a big city to him, you know. Yeah. He was so humble and down to earth, even when the successes came too.
He was. And I think everybody was so happy to see him succeed because he worked so hard to make success happen.
Yeah.
And I think that that's a big deal that is overlooked at times. He was not supposed to be that good a player. And he really didn't have the tools to be that good a player, except that he just worked so hard at perfecting what he did. And he's also a guy, statistics in the playoffs, always better than the regular season. Always. Every year, his scoring average, his rebounds, everything better in the playoffs. He played when the times got tough. He was there for him, always. Unlike some of the other guys.
Unlike a lot of guys that we turn and we look at, you know, over the history of the playoff. I mean, look, Chris Paul's a great example of this, and what he's going through right now is that, you know, he can put up decent numbers, but is it helping your team win? And that is where Jerome and kind of there's a buy-in from everybody and kind of knowing their roles on that team very well.
Well, it was a different era. You know, that was still back in the era where team basketball was played, and we're slowly getting back to that in the NBA. If you look at who's winning big now, it's teams who share the ball, teams who are not dominated by one guy hogging the ball all the time.
Miami and Boston.
Yeah.
Well, actually, all four teams left really for are sure. kind yeah, of playing
they,
just good team basketball.
That way, yeah. For yeah. sure. And it's a little different with Milwaukee because with Middleton out, Giannis had to take a bigger role. And it's no accident. They didn't win either.
For sure.
Because when you try to win in the playoffs with one guy doing all, how many times do we have to see it with Damian Lillard? As good a player as he is, if he has to do it all, he can't do it all.
Right.
They're going to take that away. They're going to double you. They're going to do what happened to Chris Paul in that series where they start trapping him, blitzing him, and they're blitzing dribble handoffs even just to keep the ball out of his hands, fence him in, and just take him away. And it's just it's more and more of a true thing now that you better make sure all your players touch the ball. Part of that's analytics.
Right. Yeah.
I never thought about it, but two or three years ago I saw the stats on it's better to have an average player shooting an open jump shot than to have your best player shooting a contested jump shot. And that's like, that goes against everything the NBA has stood for. Yeah. Just give the ball to so-and-so and let him go. Well, we saw with Brandon Roy, same thing would happen in the playoffs. Sure, he'd take the ball. He could get his own shot. That's the other NBA cliche. Can he get his own shot? Big cliche in the NBA. Well, he can, as long as you're not sending two or three guys at him. And that's what happens. And when you do that all the time, the other players stand in the corner. Maurice Harkless, Al-Farouq Aminu. They stand in the corner and wait to have the ball passed to them, even though they can't shoot threes anyway. Well, because that's all that's left for them to do.
And when the ball got to them, they'd often step out of bounds trying to make
One of my pet peeves, by the way. Guys who step on the sidelines, those sidelines haven't moved in 100 years. Okay?
It happens.
They're always
so
in the
often.
Same spot. Every game, somebody for one team or the other steps on that sideline. It drives me crazy.
They have really big feet, Dwight.
It was mainly Al-Farouq Aminu when he was on the Blazers, too.
He was good at it. Yeah. He was also good at hitting the side of the backboard from the corner three.
What you were saying, though, about the what you're saying about the wide-open jumper as opposed to a contested one from your star, it goes back to something I've said is that, you know, anybody that says, like, yeah, so-and-so's a bum, the worst player in the NBA is the best player you have ever played against.
Why, by far?
Because even if you played against, you know, Damian Lillard or, you know, here locally, if you played against Kevin Love or Kyle Singler, those guys got a hell of a lot better when they went to college and then they got to the NBA. Like, these guys are incredible.
Inevitably on Twitter, oh, so-and-so's garbage. He's trash. He's garbage. No, he's not. He's made millions of dollars playing a game that you couldn't come close to playing.
Yeah.
He's not garbage.
Comparatively to his peers, maybe, but no, he's not.
Not even to his peers, though. There's such a fine line with these guys, and so much of it has to do with the way you're used. You see guys, not much at one team. They get traded, and the next coach knows how to use them. All of a sudden, I mean, Myers Leonard couldn't get off the bench for Terry Stotts. Yeah. He starts for Eric Spoelstra. You know, and starts. He only plays 18 to 20 minutes a game. He's a starting player on one of the best teams in the league, okay? You can't take that away from him.
Yeah.
You know, don't even get me started on the contract thing because people don't understand what happened. They had to give the contracts to keep the cap space. Paul Allen insisted on keeping the cap space. So Turner and Myers, if they didn't pay those guys, they were going to lose that space.
Because there's a salary cap floor.
If you're over the cap, if you say you're $30 million over the cap, you better pay somebody that $30 million, and then you can keep that space for the next guy. But if you don't pay, it comes right back to the cap again. So you can't go over again. You can't go over whenever you want. You just can't do it. You can go over to keep your own players. And then they went out. You think Evan Turner was their first choice that year for a free agent? They paid Evan more than he had. He calls his mom and says, you can't believe what they gave me.
Well, yeah.
They wanted that space. That was Paul Allen being a good owner saying, I'll pay that just to keep the cap space. The problem was, and after that, you can't get a free agent to come here no matter what you pay him.
Well, and that Evan Turner at least was honest. In his opening press conference, I was laughing my ass off because he even said, he goes, the reason I'm here is because they paid me more than anybody else. Nobody else has given me that money. He's like, that's why I came here.
Right.
And he was just like, well, I mean, and Paul Allen was a good owner.
He was
a good owner.
Yes.
You know, and that's where I want to pick this up on the other side. Where has this thing gone awry? It was a really well-run organization and for several years. And Paul Allen would fire his GMs, but they would always have
a way.
Went off
the rails with Bob Whitsitt.
Jeff Rest back with you here. Coming up on the other side of the break, we'll switch gears and head over to Kerry Eggers, another longtime Portland journalist, and he'll talk the unlikelihood that is the success of Oregon State Beavers baseball. But first, sports.
Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Jeff Russ with you back here on a Friday in a best of edition of Dusty and Friends. And next, we're switching gears here over to Kerry Eggers, long covering the Oregon State Beavers and, of course, Portland sports. And here he and Dusty talk about the unlikely emergence and proliferation of Oregon State Beavers baseball.
It was Dave Bartu, I think, who came in and he said that the most impressive feat in Oregon sports is Oregon State's baseball program. Pat Casey built a college baseball blue blood now. Like, people think of Oregon State baseball as an elite program. They think of it as one of the ones that is always going to be good. Where do you put that, Kerry, as the impressive feats that we've seen here in the state of Oregon?
You know, I've had that mentioned to me a couple times about that's probably the most amazing job of transforming a program, which, you know, when Jack Riley was there, he had no support from the administration. Twice they tried to drop the program. Both times he helped resurrect it. Jack's a friend of mine. He did a great job there, but he didn't have the wherewithal that Pat got. But Pat worked so hard to get it, Dusty, as you know. In those early years, it wasn't easy, and they had to go through the transformation from the NORPAC to the Pac-10. And they were treated as the poor sisters of the Southern Division, as you know. They always played, for a couple of years, they always played the championship series in the South. Why is that? Well, we're better than you, I guess. So he went through a lot of stuff. You know, I think Dave's probably talking about the weather, and that's, you know, there was the idea that you couldn't play baseball in the Northwest.
Yeah.
And Pat said, screw it. I'm going to show it that we can. And it took him 11 years to build and get the team to this College World Series for the first time. And then he was able to get the financial support to get his facility to where he could recruit kids and you know, on the par with other programs in the best country in the country. And, yeah, now look at it, 20, let's see, from the 17 years from their first College World Series. They've been there seven times, I think. They got a chance to go again this time. All they got to do is get past the Auburn team that – it's like crazy. So we'll see what happens.
I think that is an incredible thing that you just said right there. That 17 years ago was their first College World Series appearance, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they've been there seven times. They've won it three dang times that stretch, too, which that's an incredible run for any school over a 17-year period. But to think of it as a team that had never or hadn't been to the College World Series in, what, 50-plus years before?
1952, I think, was the previous, yeah.
And that, to have that long of a drought, and I believe that was the only other time, right? They went once in 52.
I think so.
And then had nothing until Pat Casey got them there, and they haven't looked back ever since. That, to me, is the incredible part of this, that feat, is that they went from truly nothing into a powerhouse of college baseball. And what I think the coolest part is that they did it with guys from the region.
Yes, all Northwest guys almost.
It wasn't like they were going, you think of that first World Series, right? Where you've got guys like Jonah Nickerson from Oregon City and Dallas Buck from Newburgh.
Jacoby Ellsbury from Madras.
Yeah, Darwin Barney is from Southridge High School.
Andy Jenkins from Salem.
And that, to me, was the coolest part of that ride, is that it wasn't like they just went down to Southern California and said, here we go, we've got a bunch of ball players. It was guys, you know, from up in Washington, like, you know, Mitch Canham from Washington. It was Oregon and Washington kids that went and won a College World Series together.
Yeah, and I think Pat understood that the Northwest kids would be okay with the weather. The California kids, sometimes not so much. He's had some good California kids, too. But I think George Horton thought that he could recruit all Southern California kids and come up and, you know, knock off the Beavers. And he never was able to really do that.
It's like horse racing. You got to have some mudders, you know. You got horses that are built for the mud and the muck. And baseball players are the same way. And that is something that, you know, the small ball nature of the way that Oregon State plays, too. I mean, that was kind of at the heart of Oregon State's rise, and it was fundamentally sound baseball that you know, you see guys going to the bigs and winning a lot of games.
Yep, no question.
As it pertains to this year's team, where do they stack up as a team that can make a run? I know they're the third overall seed. They had a ridiculously tough draw with Vanderbilt. Is this a team that you could see going? You've had up close and personal looks at the three championship teams.
Well, I'm not sure they're as good as those three championship teams, but they've got some great hitting. They really do. That's probably their best trait, and they've got a real number one pitcher in Cooper Sherpy. Their defense led the nation through the regular season, but boy, it's failed them a little bit in the postseason, and I think that's a little bit of a concern. You have to be so sharp. You cannot give away runs against good teams. So do I think that they can make the College World Series? I think so, but mm-hmm. Auburn's going to be a tough test. Vanderbilt was a tough test too, so we'll see if they can pass this next one.
And you said, you know, Jerpy's gonna pitch on Saturday, right? He's gonna have plenty of rest for that one. But you know, that was one of the things that anytime you've seen any of these runs that they've made, it's not just one guy that gets you through there. Do they have number two in a bullpen that can get him through? Because I'll never forget, you know, whether it was Nickerson and Buck who went back to back in Omaha that got them that World Series title the first time.
Yeah, I'm not sure that Fenigs is ready, but we'll see. I mean, he certainly pitched better I guess he pitched the San Diego game, right? He pitched pretty well there, so they really need him. And then Jacob Matz, the freshman, who's the number three guy, did not pitch well at all, and they need him. He was 8-1 in the regular season, so now it's playing against the big boys. He's got to come through. The bullpen, you know, I really like Ben Ferrer. He's a setup guy. I think Ryan Brown pitched great at the New Mexico State game. That was the last time he pitched. So it's a question mark. There's no question.
Yeah. And Mitch Canham seems like he's a guy that he's so different than Pat Casey, but you can see a lot of the similarities too. He seems like he's, you know, the younger, more hip, cool version of what Pat Casey was as a coach, but you can still see that stoic nature that he saw from his skip.
Pat was old school for sure. And I used to joke, you know, when you talk to Pat about his team, it was always glass half empty. With Mitch, it's glass about three quarters full or maybe 90% full. It's hard to get him to criticize anything. But, yeah, he's definitely a lot like Pat in his competitiveness.
Yeah.
But it's a much more subtle competitiveness, Dusty, if you understand what I mean.
Oh, absolutely.
And so I've enjoyed working with Mitch. I really like him personally. I really like Pat, too. But he's a fun guy to be around.
Beavs in the Super Regionals Saturday, 7:30. That's when they get things going with the Auburn Tigers in Corvallis, which you mentioned the bats of Auburn. When you got the short porches that they have at Goss, the defense is going to be that much more important. The pitching is going to be huge for the Beavs if they want to get back to Nebraska.
Dusty, Auburn scored 53 runs in their three games in the regional. Yeah, I mean, they got one kid that hits 397 with 20 homers. So, yeah, it's going to be a real test for the Beaver pitching.
Well, let's see how they do in the rain. Hopefully Oregon dials up a little bit of cold weather for them.
It's supposed to rain a little bit this weekend again. Can you believe that? We're almost into July. Come on now.
You know, I'm starting to tell people, because it's the summer, you always hear, like, down in the desert, it'll be just a dry heat. I'm just telling people it's a dry rain in the summer.
it's a warm rain.
We're in the dry rain season now.
I always say you can't count on dry weather here until July 5th.
Oh, gee, after 4th of July?
Yeah.
All right.
But come on. This has been the wettest spring in a long time.
Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal.
Jeff Russ back with you here on a best of edition of Dusty and Friends. Coming up after the break, we'll have some more Kerry Eggers and his favorite moments from the rivalry formerly known as the Civil War. This is a best of edition of Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
Jeff Russ back with you here on this best of edition of Dusty and Friends. We're going to wrap up hour number two with a little more from Portland sports writing legend Kerry Eggers on his memorable moments from the rivalry formerly known as the Civil War.
You wrote the book on the, quite literally, Civil War Rivalry is the name of the book on Oregon State's rivalry started back in 1894, and there are so many stories and tales that kind of meander through this rivalry. And because when you go back to 1894, I mean, there's a lot of of grudges that get built up. But what is a story that has kind of stuck with you that kind of defines the Civil War rivalry what was called the Civil War rivalry between Oregon and Oregon State?
Oh boy, you're putting me on the spot here. This is a book that I wrote 7 years ago. I still think it's the best book that I've done though, because it's a history book that a lot of those people that I was fortunate enough to talk to, some of them are no longer with us. So it'll never be done again. It was fun to do. I'm trying to think. To me, the real fun part of the rivalry may have started when Dee Andrews was at Oregon State, and he said it was for the right to live in Oregon. And he beat the Ducks 9 out of 11 times. So it meant a lot to him. It changed, I think, when Chip Kelly was in Oregon, and he said, it's just another game. It's one of 12 games on our schedule. I still think that the in-state kids felt the rivalry, but I didn't think the out-of-state kids felt it. And that may be the case at both schools now. And I think Jonathan Smith has pretty much that same – I think the bitterness of the rivalry is more from the fans' perspective than the players, don't you?
I do. Yeah. But I think that's in every sport across – because, I mean, we look at the NBA playoffs and we look at, you know, how all these guys are buddy-buddy because they play with each other on AAU teams growing up. And you don't get that bad blood that kind of grows from, no, we're always against each other. I think that's every sport. But to your point of Jonathan Smith in him caring about the rivalry, I thought that was one thing Mario Cristobal did a really good job with at Oregon, too, is he made it a point to educate himself on what the rivalry with the Beavs was and educate his team. And that's something I hope that Dan Lanning does carry over as well. And you know, coming from SEC country with his stops at Alabama and Georgia, he knows a thing or two about rivalries.
Yes,
so hopefully it does kind of carry over with the Beavs and Washington on that Oregon side.
I think it's a lot of fun. I think, and I think the players, once they get into it, have fun with it too. There is some bitterness, but I noticed that there was more bitterness, I would say, or there's more hate feeling on the Beaver side than on the Duck side of the people that I talked to. And I think part of that is it wasn't the case in the 70s. Oregon State dominated. But in the recent years, the Ducks have dominated. So, they look at the Huskies, right? And they see the Huskies as more of a – although they've beaten the hell out of the Huskies the last, 12 years? How many – what's their record again? It's unbelievable.
I think – well, they won 12 in a row, and then I think they lost two, and then they've won three, so 15.
13 out of 15 or something. So
a
rivalry is great, Dusty, when both teams are winning. That time with Bilotti and Riley where they were trading off each year. Then Riley won one in Eugene. Then Bilotti won one in Corvallis. So that's when it's funnest to me. And that I tried to get a lot of eras in this book, and I think I got most of the eras. And that was because it changes from era to era, right? Every 20 years or so.
Yeah, and that it is football is cyclical.
It is.
It always is, and so are the rivalries, and it'll kind of swing back and forth, and that kind of leads to, there are programs where they used to be at a similar spot where they were both hungry just to be relevant and be good. And Oregon State got there in the 60s and in the 70s, like you said, where they were kind of dominating that rivalry. But then they both hit the hard times in the 80s.
Yes, they did.
Now we're looking at Oregon has turned into a giant. They don't seem like the same programs anymore.
Absolutely not. Oregon's on a different level than Oregon State.
Where the expectation is win a championship.
Yes.
And that they still haven't done that. But win the Pac-12 and get to the New Year's Six Bowls. I've long said, I think there is only a handful of programs in the country. There's probably 10 or 15 of them where that should be your expectation every year.
I agree. Yeah.
What do you think the expectation for a program like Oregon State should be as far as your lot in the world of college football?
Bowl game most years. Contend maybe for a Pac-12 title every decade or, I think that's about as reasonable as you can get. They're just not able to. They're not able to recruit on the same level as the Ducks. And it wasn't that way really until maybe even Chip Kelly got there. And it might have been before that, but certainly once Chip got there and got him to another level, then there was an assistant coach. He was a backup. I wish I could think of his name. And he was the one that pointed that out to me. It changed during my time at Oregon, and that was when Chip Kelly was there.
Really?
Yeah. Yep.
You know, there's a book on Mel Renfro by
Bob Gill. Yeah.
And there's a story in there of how Bob Gill, he went to high school with Terry Baker.
Yes, he did. Yeah.
That Jefferson football team may have been one of the best ever. Well, he was in the state of Oregon.
He was a quarterback before Terry. I think that's correct. Then Terry played with Mel and Ray Renfro and Mick Hergert, who lives out at Charbonneau where I live. And yeah, they had a great back foot, that's for sure.
But Mel Renfro, they thought he was going to go and play with Terry Baker at the Beavs, and
you know what happened?
I think a car ended up coming Mel Renfro's way, and he ended up in Eugene.
That's exactly right. Yeah, that should have thought of that story when you asked me for a story.
I mean, but you have high school teammates, and it was like Mel Renfro and Terry Baker. They're going to be together at Oregon State, and here comes the brand new car. It's like a game show. A brand new car, and he drove it all the way down to Eugene. But that was they were competitive with the same recruits. And I look at it, I say, if you are bowl game every year, I'm with you. That should be Oregon State's goal. Mm-hmm. Should be bowl game every year. Mm-hmm. But if every recruiting cycle you're relevant in the North Division to get into that Pac-12 championship game, and then, you know, if that's the case, who knows? Maybe you're in a New Year's Six game. That should be the expectation, because that's one recruiting cycle once every 4 to 5 years, right?
Right? That's right. Yeah.
You have enough talent to where, and that's what I think the beauty of Mike Riley was he got every 4 years he was there, and I mean it wasn't just there, but on the cusp of, we had, you know, the War for the Roses, where it was go time. Two of those games were. Beavs win it, they go.
The Rose Bowl, yeah.
And that should be the expectation, because those were such exciting games and exciting times.
Mike got them to the second in his Riley 2 era, those 12 years he got them to bowl games 8 times, and they won 6. And yeah, and they twice they're within one game of making the bowl game. And that you're right, that's, you know, if you can do that in a consistent basis, and I think Jonathan's on a good path, and then you're being successful.
Jeff Russ back with you here, and as we wrap up hour number two, coming up next hour, we'll have a weekend Would You Rather from a couple weeks ago, a couple of segments with Terry Boyd from KGON on his experience in monster trucks, and we'll wrap it up with Eric Peterson, Dirt's co-host on the Grip City Golf Podcast. This is a best of edition of Dusty and Friends on 1080 The Fan.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto-pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto-pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Listen to every MLB game live.
In the deep left center field, it is high, it is far, it is gone.
Stream minor league affiliates.
The Midwest League home run leader.
And watch the best baseball highlights and look-ins on MLB Big Inning. MLB At Bat is your all-in-one live baseball subscription for only $3.99 per month.
Deep left field, it's gonna go! Alvarez ties the game!
Subscribe to At Bat within the MLB app today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.